Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. Well, happy Wednesday, everyone. Wednesday, November 16th, 2022. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chase. Awesome to be back. Fired up about the Collier commitment, which we'll touch on. And we got the music going. It's just it's a good Wednesday to be a Trojan.
It is a good Wednesday to be a Trojan. So last night, in the middle of our game versus the Catamounts of Vermont. Now, I have to say, going in, I was very worried about this game. Vermont has a reputation for being, you know, on the lower end of mid-majors. Vermont has a really strong reputation. They're not high-end mid-major like, Boise State or San Diego State, if those are true mid-majors. They're definitely on the lower end as far as talent, but they've been very solid. I think they've won five conference championships in the last dozen years. The issue is, I didn't even know this stat going into the game. Apparently, they have like zero wins against Power Five conference teams over that time period. So yeah, even though the program has like a nice reputation and they're a very respectable kind of like mid-100s Ken Pom type team, they don't win these games. They just came off losing to St. Mary's by 26. They had to go to overtime to beat Fullerton. And halftime, we're sitting there down by whatever it was, 5 points, 8 points, I don't know, whatever it was. It did not look promising. Offense had really struggled. Offense continued to struggle for most of the rest of the game. And I'm thinking, gosh, we lose this game and then tomorrow is the Collier commitment. And what if we're wrong? What if we've been wrong for weeks, months, everything? But we ended up going 2 for 2, pulling it out. So it's been a heck of a, really like almost a 12-hour time span for SC. That second half against Vermont, things kind of came together a bit more. And then obviously this huge commitment today, which we'll really get into. Not that we haven't talked about it, but now that it's done, we need to talk about it. So first things first, and let's just get the bad out of the way. The offense is not fixed. I think it's going to be sluggish the whole season, quite frankly. I'm reminded a little bit of, if you remember a Big O's season, when we actually were a pretty respectable team, but that was because of our defense was so strong and we were a good rebounding team. But the offense really struggled that year, you know, and then Ethan was the sole point guard on the team, really. I guess we had Kyle Sturdivant. But I think we're going to struggle all season on offense. I mean, we kind of found something in the end of the second half with almost just running like an ISO post-up game with Drew and then kind of letting him dish off of that. And if he can do that in a finesse way and not turn the ball over, you know, I guess that can work against some teams. It's not going to work against all teams. And what, you know, I'm talking a lot here, but let me just say that one of the things I really noticed watching our offense, especially for the first, you know, whatever, three quarters of that game, there was a lot of dribbling and not a lot of passing to open players.
Yeah, I agree. Just way too much ISO. And I think one play that kind of like define the whole thing almost was Reese like dribbling into a contested three that ended up getting blocked, right? Like first off, threes off the dribble to start with are very low percentage, right? Like there's a massive difference between a catch and shoot three and three off the dribble. And that was a play where he shot a three off the dribble and it was very contested to the point of where it got blocked, right? And I'm not trying to bag on Reese. I think he's certainly a very good player. It's just kind of emblematic of the fact that we had so much ISO and so little ball movement really throughout the game. I do think, and we can touch on this too, like I thought the personnel choices in the second half were much better than our like first half rotations. We kind of found something a little bit with, I think the five was Drew, Boogie, Trey White, Josh Morgan, and who am I missing here?
Well, Reese was the starter.
Reese.
Yeah. And then actually for when we kind of went on our run, Reese was out of the game for a while and we actually used Malik Thomas for a while, even though Malik Thomas didn't do anything. Later in the game, Boogie got in foul trouble and we were playing Harrison over Boogie. So, and the offense actually seemed to do pretty well. I mean, I'm always, obviously Harrison, I'm kind of he's a question mark in my mind, but at least the offense performed well. Then look, I don't want to pick on the kid because I like him a lot and a lot of the things he does, but unfortunately with the other shortcomings on this team, it's really hard to get quality minutes for Kobe Johnson because he's not a threat in the half court offense. And we're already struggling so much in the half court offense. Now we put him in at the end of the game when we needed a defensive stop, and he made a really nice. He got a really nice rebound at the end, and then hit two free throws after he got fouled. So I mean, he is a definite positive impact on offense guy, but on defense. I'm sorry, he's a definitely positive impact on defense guy, but on offense as a starter, I think it's time to move on to Trey White. Trey also had 10 rebounds. He led the team in rebounding again last night. So I think that's the direction we're going to have to go.
I agree with that. I mean, Kobe just needs to shoot offensively, right? Like his offensive profile requires that, and just hasn't done it so far this year. Trey White just gives you more off the dribble. He's more athletic, and I think defensively too, like he's not going to be the off ball defender that Kobe is in terms of getting steals, but his one-on-one defense is pretty strong. And you can tell that he really like gives a shit on defense. You know, even that time that he got scored over, he was in a pretty good position. I mean, it was a pretty good defensive.
Oh, he played, right? I think he played out about as well as you can play it. That was like a 9.5 out of 10 defense and just better offense. Yeah. You know, the guy just hit the shot.
Exactly. Like, and he was right there. I mean, that's how you want to defend that play.
Yeah, I have to say, look, I've been wrong about players before, but I don't think I've ever been as wrong about somebody as I was about Trey White rolling the clock back 1 year. I mean, he's done everything the opposite. I thought he'd be like a selfish player, a guy that'd be like a cancer on the team, potentially not as good as he thought he was, like kind of like a Jordan Usher as far as skill set. And no, I'd say all across the board is wrong. He's really a strong rebounder. I mean, he really gets up to make those rebounds. I think he tries to do everything he can to will the team to victory. Hopefully he stays positive because I know this is going to be an up and down season. So it's going to get frustrating at times. I hope he stays positive, gets through it. Wherever we end up, we end up. But, there's going to be light at the end of the tunnel, I think.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And, I think he'll keep getting better offensively as his skill develops and he becomes a better shooter. I mean, he's a very capable shooter as he showed in high school. And I think by the end of the year, he'll be like one of the better freshmen in the conference and, a potential like preseason all Pac-12 player heading into next year.
Yeah, I think so too. Reese had a little bit better of a game at times yesterday, but still he's only 4 for 12. He had one really nice take to the basket where he finished with his left. Other times, I think, we as a team are really struggling on trying to figure out when to penetrate, when to shoot off the dribble. There's a lot of, when to catch and shoot, a lot of like catch and shoots that we pass up to dribble in and then take a really low quality shot. Luckily, as the game went along more yesterday, there was less of that. There's a lot of balls bouncing off a guy's legs. There was a point in the second half where Drew had, he drew the double team and had that feed to Joshua Morgan underhanded. And it was a little bit off and Morgan couldn't handle it, went out of bounds. I think if we convert that play, we might win this game by 8 to 10 points, kind of just comfortably come ahead. But it was one of those things. There's like nothing is clicking quite right. There was a play where we got the ball to Reese for a catch and shoot right in the corner from three. He had a great look and it just went in and out. You're not going to make everything, but like, it was just, our office is just kind of like that. Like when we need pressure shots or times where we can really kind of like take control of things, we're not connecting, we're not hitting. And it's gotten, you know, it was less clunky as the game went on, but it was never quite smooth. And I don't know if it's ever going to quite get there this season. We'll have to see. But, you know, I think it's a lot. This game, the game on offense was much more reminiscent of the game against Florida Gulf Coast than it was a game against, you know, this high school team, Alabama State. So, you know, I think we're in store for kind of a longish type season, and we're just going to have to try to work things out as best we can.
Definitely agree with that. One thing I will add, I do think I'm not as down on the team as I was kind of coming out of the Gulf Coast game. Like, I think there's a real path towards like being at least 500. Whereas I thought coming out of that Gulf Coast game, like you might be staring at like a sub 500 team, you know, with lots of bad losses. You know, I think that the Trey White thing I think is real. He's a legit good player, and you've got to figure out, like, do you just ISO Drew every time? Do you use Boogie as a shooter? Because we really get into trouble when Boogie like dribbles for 20 seconds and then there are like 10 seconds on the shot clock, right? So
yeah,
that's just a disaster. But the team does defend and they do care, and that's definitely that was not the case with certain teams of the past in the USC era.
Yeah, no, we defend. We defended that whole game yesterday. Toward the end of the game, Florida Gulf Coast started hitting shots, but that wasn't because we were playing really necessarily poor defense. I mean, they just, you know, you get hot, teams get hot at different times of the game. Certainly when we needed a stop, we got the stop at the end. So, you know, Vermont is, sorry, if I don't know if I called them Florida Gulf Coast again, I'm sorry. Vermont is what, you know, they're kind of that team that you would expect them to be. They're a really solid low mid-major program. So if you're not on your game, they can really give you a scare. Are they great? No. Is a game SC really needs to win at home? Yes. But, you know, look, we pulled it together at the end, got it done. Clearly, we're not right now at the quality of a team like UCLA is. You can tell that UCLA has done in their games like against Norfolk State and stuff. I mean, they're able to pull away from teams that are you know, decent enough. We're not at that level. We're going to have to improve and work through things and really rely on the defense. You know, luckily between Joshua Morgan and even Kajani Wright, who I think played a pretty strong game defensively, we've been playing pretty good defense. So
yeah, Kajani cares. I mean, his rotations are very good for a freshman. He's in the right spot, certainly more often than not.
And I'll tell you, look, if we go into next season and we have Joshua Morgan and Kajani Wright and Victor Uwuchukwu coming into next year, we can play those guys. And I think Kajani can play the four against most fours. And I really do think that, we would have, again, a really dominant front line potentially going into next season. So, and I guess maybe it's a time that we can kind of transition to talking about that, because the last day of signing day, I'm hoping he got his letter in. I don't know if you've checked on that.
USC did tweet it out, so it looks like it is official.
Good. All right. Well, the saga is over. the number one player in the country per 27 sports, 247 sports, Isaiah Collier from Georgia is a Trojan. He has signed a national letter of intent. Apparently he committed to the Trojans today. This is, I think both Nick and I had told you, we had heard for quite a while now that this was almost like a done deal. All the while, you know, a lot of speculation out there that he might go to Michigan, he might go to Cincinnati. I think UCLA had been kind of crossed off, but you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that we've been counting on him. It's hard, you know, this is going to be interesting because this is the third different recruit SC has had in the last 20 years or so, or maybe that has had a legitimate claim to being the number one player in his class. The first was OJ Mayo. Then obviously Evan a couple years ago. I don't think he was technically number one in any one service, but certainly had an argument for it. And now Isaiah Collier. So worked out the first two times. I know obviously they've gotten to some NCAA issues with OJ Mayo, but he was very, very good that one season. I don't think.
Oh yeah.
You know, he really, awesome. Really,
he was awesome. Oh yeah.
Awesome player. Isaiah Collier is going to be a different kind of player. He's not going to try to shoot nearly as much as OJ, nor should he try. OJ was one of those interesting guys that could always, like, he could get his jump shot off on anyone, right? Just because his style. And that's not Collier. Collier's a different kind of guy. He's going to drive to the basket, score from the outside, distribute the ball. He's a true point guard. He's going to be critical for the program. He's going to be critical for the Pac-12 conference next year, as he's last year in the Pac-12. So he's, I think, by everyone's estimation, goes in being a predetermined one and done. But he was a guy that dominated the EYBL, which is the highest level AAU league, this past summer when he played. He's going to come in with a lot of guys who are a year older, maybe rounding into the form they need to. So he's going to be the leader of a very interesting group of players for next year.
Yeah, and I do think it's worth noting that it is a weak class in 2023. So I don't think it's fair to expect a generational player. I don't think he'll have the impact that Evan did, certainly. OJ Mayo, I think, is more debatable. I think OJ was kind of more gifted in a lot of ways, but Collier's like, he's damn good. Like Eric Bossy, I know, was talking on the message boards that in a normal year, he'd probably be ranked like 8 or 9 as opposed to 1, just because of how down the class is. And he threw a few comps at it. He said he was kind of a combination of Kyle Lowry and Drew Holiday, which I thought was pretty interesting. And I think that's pretty fair just when looking at his game. I do think, though, that his game is tailored towards high-level winning in college as opposed to someone like DJ Wagner, who's more of a combo guard, getting his as opposed to setting up his teammates. So in terms of impact freshman for next year, he'd certainly be at the top of the list, and he would fill a huge void on the team just in terms of that elite lead guard ball handling role.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw a couple names at you, not from the standpoint of I think they're comps as far as players, but maybe impact on a team at the point guard position. You know, going back to Evan's season, it was Evan and then it was Jalen Suggs and Cade Cunningham. And, you know, I think that Isaiah Collier can have every bit as much of an impact as those guys did as true freshman point guard.
Yeah, if he can get there, it'd be huge. Like, I don't think he's certainly not the level of prospect that Cade is, because Cade's like a 6'8 guy, right, with, a lot of passing shooting ability. I think Cade's a better shooter. Isaiah is probably a better passer. He's a ridiculously good passer.
Yeah.
Suggs has kind of that extra gear athletically, but, you know, I think there's a pretty good case that Collier is kind of just skilled. USC fans absolutely should be like super pumped about this get. It's a huge get, and you know, he'll be the best player on the team next year. I think, like, there's no doubt in my mind.
And look, and we, potentially, you know, you look at the roster next year, look, it could be, you got Trey White in there. You got, potentially, Vince Uwachukwu back. We'd still have Reese on the team. We'll have to figure out exactly how that all shakes out. If Kajani moves over, plays the four, I mean, Kajani has looked pretty darn good so far. I've been impressed with him. It's a young team, but that could be like a pretty, you know, a lineup to coming at you: Collier, Trey White, Reese, Dixon Waters, and, Kajani Wright and Vince Uwachukwu. That could put a little fear into your opponents.
Still pretty young, right? Like, you're talking
very young
sophomores, but it's definitely talented, right?
Yeah, and then look, I think we're just based upon what we're seeing for three games, I think there's going to be one or two guys leaving the program. I definitely think they're going to be roster spots to bring in a transfer if we can do that. So, it's interesting, and hopefully. SC plays Mount St. Mary's on Friday, the game. So that's the last game before we head to Atlantis in the Bahamas. And those are going to be three tough games. I, you know, do not expect USC to win that tournament. If we, you know, I would actually, if we win one game, or that'd be nice. Two games, I think, would be great. But, you know, you got to expect, be realistic with your expectations with this team. So expect a win against Mount St. Mary's if that's a Friday game, or I think it is a Friday game. And then, you know, as we go into that tournament next week, look, anyone we can get out there, I just, hopefully we don't go 0-3, but you know, anything we can do to pull that out, you know, those are going to be important games for the development of this team. So let us talk about some other things going on in college basketball. Last night, we had a couple big games. We had Michigan State and Kentucky to start out the night, went into overtime with end of regulation inbound play that got a huge dunk for Michigan State. And then they win in, I guess it was double overtime, because the first overtime, they had another inbounds play, this one on the sideline for a dunk that got them to second overtime. And then they win the second overtime. Kentucky was number one in a lot of polls. Oscar Tshiebwe finally played. I know we've lost Nick here. Let's see if he's coming back on.
I think I'm back here.
Can you hear me? So I was talking a little bit about Kentucky, Michigan State, and how Michigan State won in double overtime. Do you have any thought? Michigan State now, you know, I really wish we do can what they do. I mean, they clearly don't have they're not a huge great talent center on that team, but now they've played Gonzaga to 1-point game. They played Kentucky double overtime and won. I think they're going to be a typical Michigan State team that probably goes like, you know, 23-10, something like that. But they have these really intriguing wins out of conference. Kentucky, I think, is, you know, they're not a superhuman team. I think they're good, but they're not superhuman.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with Michigan State too, like, they really shouldn't be a blue blood in basketball, given like the lack of local talent and the way Izzo recruits. But because they play in these like tournaments with like, you know, the Gonzagas, I guess it's Kentucky, Duke, and Kansas, and Michigan State. They always play each other every year, right? Those four.
Right.
Because they're playing in that, people associate them with the Blue Bloods, right? Even if they really shouldn't.
Well, and because of all these Final Fours, Izzo, you know, he'll be a sixth seed and ends up in the Final Four.
Right.
You know, so yeah, you just go by conference championships, titles, virtually any metric other than Final Fours, they are not a blue blood. And certainly not by NBA players. compared to when you have Duke and Kentucky out there. But yeah, they find themselves in these games. They're always pretty competitive too.
Yeah, no, that's right. Izzo's a good coach, right? Like, he gets his guys like, you know, well prepared for the tournament, and such. He's had some success in the tournament, like the Final Four, as you mentioned, but you have a lot of years where they lose in the first round too, right? Like, yeah. And you're not seeing that out of Kansas, right? But, you know, I think people kind of associate Michigan State on that same tier as Kansas, even if it's totally unwarranted.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, look, Kansas, I think we've forgotten now because Baylor's stepped up so much in the last couple of years and they won a, you know, Big 12 title or two. And, you know, Kansas, won 14 in a row, Big 12 titles. I mean, just like something that's completely unheard of in the modern era to win a power conference title all those years. I mean, almost like a John Wooden type feat. Them getting that their championship last year was only Bill Self's second title. So they haven't quite, you know, stepped up to the level of, a Duke when it comes to winning championships. But, you know, I think right now, especially with Jay Wright no longer coaching, I think that Bill Self is probably the number one coach in college basketball. I mean, this is what we really need to do. I was going to ask you about this before. If you're going to make it like you've just become the athletic director of a power conference school, you need to hire a new basketball coach. You have unlimited budget, so you can hire anybody. And the coach is like, he gets a 5-year contract starting now, you know, not past history, starting going forward. Who would you pick
yeah.
As your coach?
I think I'd take Self. I really would. Cause he's like showed it year over year, right? Over with the roster construction. I think like in one single game, like you can make the case for Sampson. I think like he's just so good in what he does. Especially given his like relative lack of talent compared to the Blue Bloods and his success year after year. And Scott Drew, I think, is in the conversation. Like, kind of what he's done with Baylor over the last 20 years is nothing short of remarkable. He's amazing. But Self is the combination of like track record of success, roster building year after year, tournament success, and there's no down years, right? Like, when was the last time you were like, Kansas is bad?
Yeah. Well, and it's remarkable because if you look on paper on what the players they're putting out there to start like this season, I mean, they should, I mean, they're whatever. They're number seven in the country and they just beat Duke yesterday. They should not be in the top 10 personnel wise. I don't think close. You know, like we watched Grady Dick in that, you know, that high school basketball, championship tournament ESPN runs, and you know, prolific prep just completely handled him, no problem. And he gets out there with Kansas in the first game, you know, he's hitting threes, coming down the court, you know, looking athletic. I mean, almost just like a completely different player. So yeah, what Self does is really remarkable. Now Scott Drew obviously needs to be in the conversation. Mark Few needs to be in the conversation. I think there's definitely guys who are dropped out of the conversation, like guys like Dana Altman. I don't think are going to be in that conversation any longer. Kelvin Sampson is it's hard. If he wins the championship this year, I think then everyone's going to just have to recognize just how good of a coach he is. I mean, I think he's obviously had a kind of a checkered history, and what he's done recently is really remarkable, but he's never actually delivered the championship yet, so that's what I think people are waiting for him, even though Mark Few's never got a championship either. So
I would with Sampson too, like I would recommend, if you have some free time and you're curious about this stuff, go listen to his press conference after they played Arizona. It was really remarkable. He went into detail about how he's like, I wasn't scared of Arizona at all because these teams were all guarding them wrong. We're going to guard them this way and do X, Y, and Z against, you know, different types of screens. And he just had it all schemed up. And then they totally just executed that to a T in that game. And it was, he's so good with X's and O's, just amazing mind.
Yes, he is absolutely amazing mind. The other interesting game. So Tennessee is playing right now against Florida Gulf Coast. They've got like a 10-point lead in the first half. They played the Colorado Buffaloes the other day over the weekend, and on Sunday, I think, and at home, and lost, kind of pooped the bed. KJ Simpson just kind of took over in that game in some ways. I have to say that, look, SC Vera may lose to Colorado. Colorado, we even get swept if they play twice. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't think that their SC is like a much better team than Colorado, but Colorado does not impress me. I don't think they have nearly the kind of talent they've had in past years. And yet they were able to go to Knoxville and win this game pretty easily against Tennessee. And this is the same Tennessee team that had just kind of cleaned Gonzaga's clock in an exhibition game. So I don't know. What do you think about that? It's kind of I guess it's just college basketball and there are weird games, weird results. Colorado is coming off a loss to Grambling. Now, is that Grambling? It's this weird, dumb decision for the Pac-12 to play. It's one thing if you want to do a series with SWAC schools, but don't do the road games. I mean, do the road game. Just this. I mean, just crazy. I think Pac-12 might be winless in these road games. Every single road game of these SWAC schools, Pac-12 is going to be losing. I watched the end of the game, the Grambling game, and there were like maybe 100 people in the stands. I mean, that's just not an appropriate way for, you know, the conference to be forcing our members to doing these road games. I mean, to spend the money to go out to Louisiana and play in front of a crowd of 100 people. I mean, I don't think that's right. Anyway, I'll throw it to you. Any thoughts you have about all that stuff?
ridiculous decision to do it. Totally agree. Like, if you want to, you know, pay for the SWAC team's travel to come play you at home, I think that's totally reasonable, right? Because you're going to be paying for, you know, the other team's travel anyway to come play you, like whatever opponent. But doing a road game down there is completely ridiculous. Clearly, the SWAC team's not paying for your travel to go there, right? They just don't have the budget to do it.
No.
So, no, I think it was a horrific decision by the conference to do it. Tad Boyle, man, I mean, he can coach. I mean, there's no doubt year after year, he doesn't seem to have super talented teams and they just, you know, get it done. Like, he doesn't make the tournament every year, but given like where Colorado should be as a basketball program compared to what they have been over the last 10, you know, 10 or so years, you just gotta hand to the guy for sure. KJ looked great. They just really defended in that Tennessee game, right? Like, they were just so good with their rotations and, you know, I think they went into that Grambling game thinking, okay, like, we're the Power Five team. We can just walk all over these guys. And they just didn't put out the necessary effort. But, in that Tennessee game, I mean, they just played so freaking hard and, this is a really impressive win. They hit enough shots. They're not a great shooting team, but hit enough threes. KJ kind of did his thing. He rebounded too. He had 10 rebounds in that game. So yeah, I thoroughly impressed with them. Like, I thought Tennessee was a better version of Colorado kind of coming into the year. And yeah, 12 point win. I mean, this, what else can you say, right? Great win.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's transition a little bit maybe to the gridiron and big game in Los Angeles in at the Rose Bowl on Saturday between USC and UCLA. You can't really say it's for the Pac-12 title because all these other things kind of are now involved. And UCLA, of course, lost in that, you know, Pac-12 after dark game to Arizona. You know, this is a huge game for SC because they're the last Pac-12 team remaining that could actually make the college football playoff. I think we've discussed this. I don't think that that's going to happen, but it's a mathematic possibility. And this would be a huge piece of it because of SC's remaining games. I think this is on paper clearly the tougher game, road game, UCLA. UCLA's offense is really dynamic. Our defense is really weak. I expect them to score a lot of points. I expect that we're going to struggle to stop them from scoring, and unless we can cause turnovers. And obviously we're a little shorthanded. I'm not sure Travis Dye is now out. I guess Jordan Addison is back. I don't know if Mario Williams is playing. So it's a lot of stuff up in the air for SC offensively. I guess Eric Gentry is supposed to be back on defense, but you know, and he's been when he was there before he got hurt, he was our best defensive player, but he's not like a one man all, you know, stop the opposing offense type of guy. He just, you know, helped cause a lot of problems. So all that being said, SC is actually favored in this game, right? It's like a strange line.
1.5, I think.
Yeah. So where are you on SC UCLA for Saturday?
I like SC. I think we'll have, you know, a very good representation. The fan base will show out for that. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are more SC fans there than UCLA fans there. I think they held out Addison in the Colorado game just to have him 100% for the UCLA game. Gentry, although he's not like a Brian Cushing type player, I think his like wins above replacement, so to speak, is so high because the backups are so bad. So having him back, I think, is crucial. And yeah, I just think, you know, USC has the better quarterback and it's the better offense. And I think the defenses are actually comparable. I don't think UCLA can stop anybody. It's like Oregon blew them out, right? And Washington and goes and beats Oregon. So I think USC's better. I think the line's fair. I don't think it's going to be an easy game by any stretch, but I kind of think Caleb just wills it late. In terms of the kind of the playoff implications, I do think if USC wins out, they'll get in. So we can talk about the scenarios there. I think TCU will drop one. I don't think the loser of Ohio State, Michigan, being a non-Big Ten division champ, will get in. Their resumes are pretty atrocious. Like, Penn State's the only ranked opponent that either of them play. They decided not to challenge themselves in the non-conference. I guess Ohio State has the Notre Dame thing, but, you know, so does USC. I think it would be a more impressive resume than either Ohio State or Michigan if they lose. I think Tennessee, that's kind of the school that, you know, you're going to have to compare SC to. They also didn't win their division. So that gets tough for them. I don't think the playoff committee has ever taken a non-division champ outside of the 1 year where Alabama got in as a one-loss team over a two-loss Ohio State team. This would be comparing one-loss Tennessee to one-loss USC in theory. So I feel pretty good about USC getting into the playoff if they handle their business. That being said, I think the odds of them going 3-0 against UCLA, Notre Dame, and Utah or Oregon are certainly below 50%. I'd probably put it at around maybe 35 to 40%.
Yeah. So the one thing I will say is I think if SC wins out there, and you have to always throw, it would, you know, one of the competitors would potentially be Clemson, right? Because if they won, I don't know if there's an ACC team that can get in. I think TCU actually has a pretty decent chance at winning out. They've got Baylor, Iowa State, and then presumably Kansas State. I think the way TCU's won games, I think those are eminently winnable games for them. So I think that they will probably – they have a pretty good chance of winning out, and I think if they're undefeated, they're going to get in.
I agree.
Look, there are some really odd scenarios. Like, what happens if LSU beats Georgia? Does Georgia still get in? I don't expect that to happen, but I guess there are stranger things that have happened. I mean, yeah, what would happen if a two-loss LSU team wins the SEC championship? I guess that potentially could knock out SC, right? Let's say things go kind of as we might expect. You have the winner of Ohio State, Michigan. You have TCU potentially. You obviously have the SEC winner. I think SC would have a decent chance and a decent argument if they went out. But look, it's just the tall task of winning out. So, I don't know where we get left on that score. But it starts, I guess it all starts Saturday. And I do not necessarily think SC is going to win on Saturday, but look, I'm not going to bet money against them, and we'll see how it goes. I just, you know, the defense is it just scares me all the time. I don't know. Before we get out of here, you have any other things you want to talk about?
Just one question I want to shoot you. Okay. Who is the third best team in the Pac-12 in basketball right now?
Wow, what a question. If we were to run like a, let's say we did a round robin, like right now, like everyone played each other right now. Oregon State. I would guess Colorado potentially, but maybe Stanford. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Stanford. I don't. It's hard to say.
I think I'd say Colorado.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like the funny thing is Colorado played Oregon on a neutral right this moment. I don't know who would actually. I know Oregon has that really bad loss, obviously, at home to Irvine, but they came back and beat Montana State. I don't know. That's an interesting question. Certainly on paper, Oregon's got more talent. I don't really understand what. I don't understand why Altman has let his program slip. And I don't know if it's the way that he has to recruit players and he can't recruit. Maybe it's a guy like Will Richardson has never quite been the kind of, he never turned into Peyton Pritchard. I'm just not sure. I did. That's a,
right.
You know, the more, look, the older you get, the more college basketball you watch, I think you have to appreciate a guy like Peyton Pritchard, you know, or a guy like Dylan Brooks, you know, that are just willing to take the team under their wing and just say, we're going to win this game. And Oregon hasn't had that the last few seasons or a couple seasons. So, and maybe that's the problem. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's easy to take guys like Peyton Pritchard and Chris Duarte for granted. Both were just really good, right? Just damn good college basketball players. And he's starting to dip into the one and dones who are more about potential than production. Like Kellel Ware is pretty raw in terms of like impacting winning at a high level. And he's almost certainly going to be a one and done, right? So, you know, they've got to lean on Nafali Dante a lot, but Richardson not really developing into that lead guard, and some of these transfers just being a little too inefficient. And, you know, you add all these things together and you kind of slip into, you know, bubble team territory. I think they've got a huge game coming up. They're hosting Houston on Sunday.
Yeah.
And KenPom has a 3-point Houston win. I think it's going to be a blowout. What do you think there? Like,
you know, this is one, is the game, is this part of, it's not PK85, is it?
I think it's in Eugene. I think it's a home game for Oregon.
It's a home game, yeah. Okay. Sometimes Oregon will rise to the occasion in games like that. I still think Houston. Even if Oregon rises to the occasion, as the game wears on, Houston's just going to be way too much for them. And yeah, I think three points is not enough. I would definitely, I definitely laid the points.
I think that's 10 to 15.
Yeah, probably. Actually. Probably. All right. So as we break here, Tennessee up by 10 against Florida Gulf Coast with just under 4 minutes to go in the first half. Curious how this one ends. But all right. So SC's got Mount St. Mary's coming up later this week, and then the big game on Sunday. And Isaiah Collier is now a Trojan. So it's been a good 24 hours for SC. So I guess for that, we can say fight on.
Fight on.